The topic that you're about to hear is the kind of topic that many of you, if not all of you, are going to want to speak with her afterwards. Don't bombard her. You have to take a number. But we're very lucky. It's a zechut for me personally and for the school in general. And we, with much gratitude, we want to say thank you and welcome to Mrs. Haber.
I know that there are some of you from SKA, and I apologize I don't know your names, but I am terrible with names, so kal vachomer if I never taught you, but I might recognize some faces. And also, you should know, if you remember, when you were in 10th grade, right, there was a video of Nisan for New Year's, right? So I have to sort of apologize to you because I'm speaking about the same topic tonight, but I have a lot more stories related to that, so... from what I heard, the video went over, okay? So that's all. It might sound a little familiar to you. Oh, and you. Okay. So my name is Mrs. Haber, as you know. And I think also, who has my husband? Okay, because I heard that he told over one story when he spoke. It's really a story from my speech. But I told him that I'm not speaking in Shalabim. You could say all the stories, and I didn't know I was going to be speaking here. So I'll just skip that story, but I have lots of others. Anyway, this is about my son Shmuel, but it's really about a lot of other things. I have a son Shmuel who's autistic. He's 10 years old. And before I start my story, let me just explain to you what autism is. Autism is a spectrum. That means it goes from one degree to another. And in the most severe degree of autism, which my son does not have, the child is completely in his own world. He may flap, he may spin things, he may hum. He completely is in his own world, no eye contact, doesn't relate to people at all. And that's one end of the spectrum. And the other end is something called Asperger's, which people you know may even have, and you may not be aware of it. It's they can relate to people, they can even have a job, they just have a very, very logical way of looking at things, and they don't relate to people 100% the way other people do. That's the spectrum. So my son is somewhere in the middle. So that's what autism is. But their main thing is that they don't necessarily interact with people. So one day, his name is Shmuel. Now don't get mixed up. I have another son whose name is Shlomo. And the reason I have that is because I had to name them after people. So anyway, one day, Shlomo came over to me and said, Ima, I know you love Shmuel and everything, but honestly, if you had a choice, are you happy that you have Shmuel, that he's autistic, or would you rather he wasn't? So I had to sit and think about that for a while. And I sat and thought and thought and thought, and this is what I came up with. First of all, the most amazing thing about having Shmuel was like this. When I was in high school, I did chesed, because there was a chesed requirement, but to be quite honest, I was never comfortable around children or people with special needs. And then when I went to Michlala, and then I went to Stern, and all my friends were working in Hask. And who worked in Hask here? Okay. So they always used to say, come work with me, come work with me, you're gonna love it there. And I said, no, it's not for me. I really wasn't comfortable. And then my friend told me the following story. She said, listen to this story. It's a great story. She said, I was working out as a counselor in Hask. She actually requested little kids, and she got women, which is a huge difference. And she was very uncomfortable in the beginning. She said the first 2 weeks she lost a lot of weight because she couldn't eat next to them. She said by the end of the summer she was eating off their plate. Anyway, she said that one time her parents came to visit her in the middle of the summer, and they had a rule in Hask, I don't know if they still have it, that the parents are not allowed in unless it's visiting or special time. So the parents were waiting at that gate, and then they announced to her, come to the gate, your parents are here. So she came running, but the problem is one of her women had just thrown up all over her. So she came running to the gate, and her parents saw her, she'd throw up all over her, and her mother is a very perceptive person, and she looked at her and she said, I have never, ever seen you look so happy and fulfilled as this moment. And my friend was telling me this story to make me want to come to HAC. And I said, that's great for you. That's not for me, okay? No, go away. So I just wasn't comfortable around those kind of things. So what happened was that besides that, I was also working at SKA, and at that point I had two little kids, and they were both even in the school right across the road from SKA. There's a HAL preschool. I was Mrs. SKA. I was always there when we had a sleepover. I slept over in the nurse's office, on the cot, with my seven-month-old baby. When we went lobbying in Washington, I went with my four-month-old baby. I was just always there. So I was not at all the kind of person who, I loved my kids, I loved my family, there wasn't a question, and my kids were still little, I could afford to do this, but I wasn't one of these people who was, you know, like a stay-home mom or someone who spent, you know, 14 hours a day devoted to her children. So this was, when my son was born, Shmuel, he was my third child, and when he was born and I started to realize he had problems, I didn't know he was autistic until he was 5 years old, which is very, very late to find out. So, but I saw he had problems already when he was younger. But I was in a different world. I was very involved in my job, and what has happened to me today because of him, I'm a completely different person because of him. So it showed me, having Shmuel has shown me my potential. It showed me something I never knew about myself and something I never imagined could ever happen to me, that I'd be comfortable around people with special needs and that I could be so involved with my child, because as the story progresses, I'm going to tell you a little bit more how involved I've been with my child. I've changed completely and I've realized that I can do things that I never, ever, ever realized I could do. So that's the first thing that I gained from having Shmuel. The second thing that I gained is that a really strong sense of hashkacha and spirituality. And I'm going to tell you a whole bunch of stories that made me realize this. The most powerful story is when we made Aliyah 3 years ago, we were all supposed to go on the plane together. And then Shmuel was doing crazy things, like a few days before we packed, I would pack a suitcase. Can you all hear me? Yeah? Okay. I would pack a suitcase, he would unpack the suitcase, I would pack a box, he'd unpack the box. Basically, it was horrible. 15 minutes before the cab was supposed to come to take us to the airport, we didn't know where Shmuel was. He had run away, which he never did before because we always locked the door, but we kept the door open because we were bringing bags in and out. And we weren't even all packed because everything I unpacked, he unpacked. And my husband and I looked at each other and said, okay, one of us has to stay here. We can't both go on the plane. We can't leave the apartment like this. So I went on the plane alone with my four children. And we got to the airport and my husband waited in line with us. And then there's a certain point where the visitors can't go with you anymore. So my husband stayed behind. We went ahead and we went to security, and they had these, you know, big American guys standing there, and then they had the poles with, and you're supposed to walk through and beep. And suddenly Shmuel realized that my husband wasn't coming. He didn't realize that. So autistic people don't like changes, and he couldn't handle that. He ran away. He ran through the whole airport. We were, you know, a huge airport. We were looking for him. We finally got him back. He was hysterical. He went to the sensor and he lay down on top of it and he wouldn't move. And when he's a very solid kid, and when he doesn't want to move, he doesn't move. I couldn't move him. And everyone was in line, we were all making Aliyah, and they were all patient. But the guard, move him, lady, move him, you move him, okay? And he would move. And then he finally, I didn't say that. I wasn't Israeli yet, okay? So we were waiting there after the sensor. Finally, I got him through. This kid is not getting on the plane. I don't know what to do. So finally we found these magical floors, which saved our lives. You know what I'm talking about? They're conveyor belt floors. So I got him on the beginning, and no matter what he did, he moved to the end. And then I got him on another one, got him on another. Finally, we got on a plane. I strapped him in the plane. I said, I was exhausted. I hadn't slept the night before. I was packing, and I was hoping for a nice nap on the plane. It was 11 o'clock at night. I was exhausted. Well, he decided to go to the bathroom, which is very cute. He was 7 years old and he still wasn't trained. He was still wearing diapers, but he wanted to go in the toilet, which was amazing because I had been working with him on that for 5 years. So, okay, he wants to go in the toilet in the airplane. Well, as soon as I unbuckled him and he went in the toilet, he never let me buckle him again. And that was the end of my sleep. The entire flight, he did not sit down. He went up and down the rows, and everybody was screaming at me, okay? First of all, he ran into first class because there was just a thin curtain separating it. So Nefesh kept coming over to me and saying, "Keep him out. You keep him out." And I couldn't keep him out. And the people were very nice there. Every time he passed them, they high-fived him. But Nefesh wasn't so excited about it. I mean, I'm not trying to say anything bad about them. Don't misunderstand. But it was 11 o'clock at night. There were some older people on the plane in first class who needed their sleep, okay? It wasn't like... And then when I wouldn't let him in, he started to tantrum. So he woke up all the babies on the plane. So everybody started screaming at me. I just didn't know what to do. I really didn't know what to do. So finally I found a little corner of the plane where there was one of those galleys, and it was the kind not with two doors on the side, it just had one door. I stood and blocked the door and I put him there. And I thought, okay, I will stand here the rest of the night. He won't walk out. And I actually breathed a sigh of relief because I had a plan. And then someone came over to me and said, "You can't stay here, it's dangerous." And then I saw this sign, you know, they have those emergency exits that say, "Don't touch this red bar," right? So I said to the flight attendant, "Is it really dangerous if he touches it?" She said, "Don't let him near that." And I said, "That is crazy, and that's really scary, because my kid's very strong. Anyway, I had to keep him away from the first class, and the babies, and the door, and everything. So anyway, when this person said to me, "This is dangerous, get out of this room," I just started to cry. I was overtired. I didn't know what to do. Everybody was screaming at me, and I just couldn't stop crying. And then I sat down on the floor, and I was crying. And I felt somebody near me, but I didn't want to look up because, you know, my mascara was down to my chin. So I just sort of looked down. Finally, he just stayed there. I looked up. It was one of the flight attendants. He said, "I'm going to help you. I work with autistic kids." And then the woman flight attendant came over and said, "I volunteer with autistic kids. I'm going to help you." Can you imagine? Two out of the four flight attendants worked with autistic kids. So that was like my best, oh, God's watching me, okay? No, maybe nobody else's, but God's watching me. And they were so wonderful the rest of the flight. They let him sit on their special seat, you know, they sit on, and he was okay the rest of the flight because of them. So that, and what happened was, understand, if I felt that God was watching me because of him, it's not just, I don't just feel it when I'm around him, I just feel like, wow, you know, I'm this one little person in this whole universe, and somebody's looking out for me, and it's just an unbelievable feeling because God can do anything, and here was this being who can do anything, and he was looking out for me. So that was an unbelievable example for me. And then I come to Israel, and I want to try this therapy called cranial sacral therapy, which is whatever, a kind of therapy. Anyway, so I go to this lady, Donna, who's very famous in Ramat Beit Shemesh. She's really good at what she does. And I'm thinking of using her for my son. And she tells me, okay, this is the price and everything. And then I said, "How often would you want to see him?" She said, "Once a week." I said, "Well, honestly, I can't really guarantee that I'm going to get him to you on time once a week. He doesn't always move when I tell him to. I don't think I should do this." So she said, "Well, the truth is my office is moving next week. Maybe it will be closer." I said, "Where are you moving to?" She says, "Lachish." I said, "I live on Lachish. What number?" She says, "Lachish 9. I said, "I live in Lachish 9. I couldn't believe it. She was moving to my building. So we went once a week. I can get him to go down the stairs. That wasn't a big deal. Oh my gosh, someone's watching out for me. Then there's this other therapy that I started to train in America called Sunrise, which I'm going to tell you about in a few minutes. And when I trained in America and Massachusetts in it. And when I came to Israel, I figured I would not get any help in it because it's a Massachusetts-centered place, and that's all. Anyway, I found out that there's this woman, Tali, who lives in Israel, who brought it to Israel, and she helps families. So I called her up, and I said to her, "Okay, how does this work and everything?" And she tells me I should meet with her whenever I want. I said, where's your office?" So she says, "In Ramat Beit Shemesh." Like the one person in Israel who's doing the kind of therapy that I am doing for my son, it's a very unusual kind of therapy, her office is in Ramat Beit Shemesh. So that was also amazing. Then my husband told me which story he told you, which is what I would tell at this point. So I'm the one, well, I guess you're not all in his class, so I should tell it to you anyway. I'll tell it to you anyway. Okay, now this is another one he didn't tell. This is amazing. Okay, so when we made Aliyah, we were only planning to live in our apartment for 1 year. So I didn't unpack a lot of my boxes because we were planning to move in a year. But one box burst open and there were papers all over the floor. So I had a lot of drawers in my kitchen. I picked up all the papers and I put them in one drawer in the kitchen. And then I was cleaning for Pesach. and this one, that drawer, and this one paper kept sort of flying out, and I kept putting it back, and then it kept flying out, so finally I picked it up and read it, and this is what it said, and I never saw it before in my life, and it said, "Good morning, this is God. I'll be taking care of all your problems today, and I don't need your help, so have a nice day. I love you." And I was like, oh, it was so nice, because I was having a little bit of a hard time with Shmuel and my other kids, and it was just really nice. Where did I get that paper from? Is it even Jewish? I don't know. I wasn't sure where it came from. And then I remembered that when I was working in SKA, one of my colleagues as a present had photocopied, I ran a lot of programs there, so she had photocopied for me any cute poem or any like nice saying that she saw, and she had presented it to me in a book, and I had never had a chance to read it, so it was from there. Okay, very nice. So I'm reading it, and then my daughter came in, and my daughter sees this paper on the floor, and she picks it up, and she starts reading it, and she starts to read it in a little bit of a silly voice about 20 times, and it lost all its meaning for me, because when you hear something a lot of times, it just doesn't sound good anymore. Like, I'm having to say the, right? You say the 20 times, it sounds like a funny word. And that's right. I'm just like, "Good morning, this is God. I'm taking care of all your problems today, and I don't need your help, so thank you so much. I love you. Have a nice day." And I'm okay. It lost it. It wasn't helping me anymore. Anyway, I cleaned up the drawer, went to sleep. The next morning, I knocked on my neighbor's door, right across the hall from me. I needed to ask her something. And there was a magnet on her door that was never there before. I promise you, I'm telling the truth. It said, "Good morning, this is God. I'll be taking care of all your problems today, and I don't need your help. Thank you, have a good day." It didn't say, "I love you," which, by the way, sounded a little less cheesy, so it was okay. I knocked on her door, I said, "Where'd you get that magnet from?" She said, "Which magnet?" I said, "That one." She goes, "Oh, we're Breslov, and this is from Rav Nachman. It's a Breslov say. I don't know, we always have that magnet on the other side of my door. I don't know why my kid decided to put it on the door this morning." You know, somebody wanted me to get this message. It was really weird. And then, over the next couple of weeks, every once in a while, I'd be like a little bit down, and my autistic kid, Shmuel, walked over to me and would say, "Good morning, this is God. I'll be taking care of all your problems today, and I don't need your help. Thank you, have a good day, I love you." And the reason he said that is because he has an unbelievable memory, and he heard my daughter say it 20 times. So he remembered it, and he doesn't know what he's saying, but he just would occasionally walk over to me and say it. And I told you this because of Shmuel that I feel this hashgacha. It's because of Shmuel that I feel this extra spirituality. And here, literally out of his mouth was coming the words saying, "God is, I'm watching you." It was unbelievable. Now comes a story that I think my husband told you, where one time, you see, Shmuel, I'm saying all the cute things about him, but the truth is it's not so easy living with an autistic kid, and you'll hear more about that in a few minutes. But so what? Every once in a while, I get a little impatient with him. And one day, I said, "Shmuel, you're driving me crazy." And he said, "No, Ima, say thank you, Hashem." I said, "What?" He said, "Say thank you, Hashem." So, like, you have to understand, he has an unbelievable memory, both auditory and photographic. That's why when my husband leaves his sparim all over the table and I don't know where they go, Shmuel puts them away, because he knows exactly where the red ones go and where the blue ones go and where the brown ones go. He has a really good memory. A lot of autistic kids have really good memories. So here's the thing. He has like a computer in his head. So if he hears something that reminds him of something he heard on a tape, he will say it, and it's not always appropriate. So one time, for example, a plumber came to visit me, and Shmuel was hanging out there, and then I said to Shmuel, "Do you want to know what his name is?" He said, "Yeah." So I said, "Ask him, what's your name?" So he said, "What's your name?" So the guy said, "Yossi." So then right before Yossi left, Shmuel said to him, "Good job, Yossi." And I was thinking, you know, that sounds familiar. Where did he get that from? And then a few weeks later, I was listening to it. My kids were listening to a tape where the Rebbe asks the boy a question, and he says, "Good job, Yossi." So you see, like, he applies things. So I figured that he probably got that line, "No, say thank you, Hashem," from somewhere, but I still to this day have never heard where he got that from. And also the fact that he applied it appropriately was amazing, even if he did hear it from somewhere. But I was laughing when he said that to me, when he said, "No, thank you, Hashem." And I wanted to see if he understood. So I said, "Thank you for what?" He goes, "For me, for Shmuel." And it was so freaky, you know, because the truth is, as you get the point, I'm really grateful that we have Shmuel, even if it's a little bit hard to live with him sometimes. And I really am. It was great because he diffused the moment. I was so tense and he made me laugh, and it was great. Now, here is the craziest story of all of them. I don't think that's the one my husband told you, the one I just told you. Right? Okay. Here's the craziest one. All right, so there's something called facilitated communication. And I was reading a book one Shabbos about it, somebody had lent me. Anyone ever hear of facilitated communication? Anyone? You heard of it? Okay. It sounds very crazy, and people think it's not true. But I was reading a book that was proving that it was true. So whatever you think about facilitated communication, it doesn't matter. I'm going to tell you quickly about it, and then I'll get to the point of the story. Facilitated communication, they take these kids who completely cannot relate to the world at all. And completely, their bodies are just out of control. Not like my kid. My kid, thank God, can talk. Completely out of control. And what they do is they put their hands on a typewriter or a computer screen, and the kids, even with their eyes closed, even while they're sleeping, are able to type appropriate things. And it's because, and this is across the world, this is not just in Jewish circles, they believe that the soul is speaking. Now, a Jewish interpretation of it is that everybody's soul is very close and connected to Hashem, but our body gets in the way, what our body wants, what our body desires, but these people, their bodies aren't working right, so it's not getting in the way of their soul, so their souls are much closer to God than ours are. So you take their hands, even while they're sound asleep, you ask them a question, and their fingers type it out. And they even did this on a three-month-old baby in the hospital. They put a chart up with the alphabet on it, and her fingers typed out the right thing. Now, this book was explaining to the people who attack facilitated communication why it is true. For example, some people say, it's not the kid writing, it's the person who's called a facilitator who's holding the hand, because they need someone to hold the hand. And he was saying how that's not true. First of all, very often the facilitator didn't even know the language the kid was speaking, and second of all, by the time they progress, the facilitator doesn't have to hold the hand. And also, this man once came along and he wanted to prove it was wrong, so he was purposely trying to get the kid to type the wrong answer, and he couldn't do it. The hands had a mind of their own. Anyway, I was reading this book, and these parents were coming over to their kids who they completely could not communicate with and saying, what can I do to make your life easier? You seem so tortured. So all the kids answered, learn Torah with me. Even if it's hard, it doesn't look like I understand, it makes my neshama so happy. Learn Torah with me. So I was reading this one Shabbos, and I was so moved by it. And even though I wouldn't do this with Shmuel because he does communicate, so I don't think this would work with him, I was very moved, and I said to my husband, we got to learn more with Shmuel. Now the truth is, we do learn with him and we do daven with him, and he makes a mean Asher Yatzar, let me tell you. But I figured, let's learn more with him. So Sunday night, my husband came home, and Shmuel was lying on the couch, and he was like sort of half asleep. And my husband came home and said, come Shmuel, you want to learn Torah with Abba? So he like, yeah, I want to learn Torah with Abba. So I said to my husband, I'm sorry, you can't learn with him right now. He made a little bit in his underwear, and you're not allowed to learn, right? So my husband goes, okay, Shmuel, let him change you, and then I will learn with you. But he was very tired, and he goes, no, I want to learn Torah with Abba, I want to learn Torah with Abba. And it sounded so sad, you know, the kid begging to learn Torah with Abba. So I said to my husband, you know what, maybe just like a teensy bit, right? Maybe it's okay, it's not really so much, whatever. So then my husband's like, okay, Shmuel. So he gets up off the couch, he's half asleep. He walks over to the bookshelf, randomly pulls out a sefer, randomly opens it up, brings over to my husband, says, let's learn Torah with Abba. And my husband looks and goes, you're not gonna believe this. I said, what? It was a Mishnah Berurah, it was the halacha that you're not allowed to learn Torah in front of a baby with a dirty diaper. Okay, that's not freaky, I don't know what it is. Okay, now, so that's number two. I have six Roman numerals here, we're up to number two, okay? So again, my son's question was, are you glad you have Shmuel? So far I told you about it showed me my potential, and number two, it gave me a greater sense of hashgacha and spirituality. Number three, all right, it's having Shmuel has helped me appreciate the little things in life, and I'll give you an example. He had therapists since he was about a year old. So I learned from the therapist, just an example, something very interesting. There's an imaginary line in front of you called, I forgot. It doesn't matter what the name is. Okay. So basically, a child, a normally developing child, midline, okay? A normally developing child at a certain point, if like something's on his left side, will reach over the midline to take it. Something's on his right side, he'll reach over with his other hand. But autistic kids have to be taught everything, every little thing. So she had to teach him, like there was something on his right side, he would automatically reach with his right hand, and she had it like sort of forced him to do it with his left hand. Every little thing had to be taught. So that by the time my next kid came along, when she was doing things normally, I was just in awe of her. Like, wow. She's reaching middle, she's reaching over middle, and wow, she knows how to, it's unbelievable. So that was like, it helped me appreciate little things. And here's another example. So Shmuel was about 2 years old, and he wasn't talking, and he wasn't saying anything. However, he's deaf in one ear, which doesn't really have anything to do with his autism. And actually, that's part of my next story. Yeah, okay, wait. Oh, it's 1 second. Okay. Anyway, so, but he has a great ear for music, despite that. So because of that, he loved hearing songs. So because of that, I made everything into a song. And I'm not going to start singing now, but everything was a song. The name of the people in the family were a song, changing the diaper. Anyway, there was one thing that he loved that one of my other kids came for. It's not a song, so I think it's okay for me to say, you know, hello, my name is Joe. You know, does anyone know that? Hello, my name is Joe. Raise your hand if you know that. Okay, so my other kid came home with it, and Shmuel loved it. So that's how I got him to let me change his diaper. I would go like this. Hello, my name is Joe. I work in a button factory. You know, I have a cat and a dog and a family. One day, my boss said, Joe, are you busy? And I said, no. Okay, that's the way it really goes. But I don't know why, I changed it a little bit and he loved it. And I would go, one day, my boss said, Joe, are you busy? And I said, no way. Okay, and he would burst out laughing. So he would let me do anything to get that no way. So one time we were taking a trip, it was the last trip we took as a family, and we were taking a trip, we were in Camp Misora for the summer, and we went upstate New York, and we stopped at a gas station, and my husband took the two little kids out to the bathroom, and I was left in the car with Shmuel, and he was starting to get a little impatient. So I started to say this with him, hello, my name is Joe, I work in a button factory. And then when I got to the words, I said, are you busy? And he said, and I decided to try something. I was thinking to myself, you know, Shmuel maybe doesn't talk because he doesn't need to talk. He doesn't have any motivation to talk. We know what he's saying with his hands. I'm going to try to give him a motivation. So I said to him, and I said, are you busy? And I said, and then I didn't say anything. Instead of saying no way, which is what he's waiting for, and I said, and I went like that, and he's like, there's no other way to describe it. He's bristling with excitement. And I just stand there. And then I said, are you busy? And I said, and he's like, oh. And I didn't say anything. And I said, are you busy? And all of a sudden I hear this little voice go, no way! And I burst out crying. I mean, those were the first words the kid ever said in his life. And then my husband came back with the two kids from the gas station. They're like, he said no way! He said no way! And they're like, no way! And I was crying, and of course they tried to get him to do it. He's not going to do it, because they wanted to do it. But like, he said no way. Those are two words, but I appreciated those words. Those are the most valuable thing I think that I ever heard. And all this came about because he doesn't do anything normally. Now, here's another example. The song B'Shem Hashem by Shlomo Kalbach, that I don't think he ever recorded, but Neshama Kalbach recorded. You know the song? Raise your hand if you know the song. Okay, so it's a beautiful song, okay? The tune is beautiful, the words are beautiful. B'Shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael, in the name of Hashem, the God of Israel. My right hand is Michael, the left hand is Gabriel. In front of me is Uriel, behind me is what? Raphael? Ba'al Roshi, and on top of me is Hashem. So I like the tune, I like the words. And what happened was, my students in SKA knew that I loved it, so they took a CD, they burned that song into a CD for me, and I put it in my car, and it was always on. So basically, whenever I would turn the key in the ignition, it would go on. So what ended up happening is sometimes when bad things happen and I had to drive away afterwards, I would always have that song with me. It just went on automatically when I went in the car. So it sort of became a theme song for me, which was very relevant, because it's about Hashkacha, it's about how Hashem's watching you. And the most powerful time for me was when I went to the hospital with my son, Shmuel, because he needed to have a hearing test. It was just a standard thing. Nobody thought he was deaf. And he was autistic. He couldn't do the hearing test where you raise your right hand and you raise your left hand. They had to do it a special way where they had to actually put him out completely and bypass the ear, go straight into the brain and see if he's hearing. So I wasn't worried at all. Only one thing worried me, which was that he had to have anesthesia for that, general anesthesia, and he had to fast until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I didn't know how I was gonna keep a two-year-old from eating or drinking anything, and that's the only thing that worried me. So I went myself, and it was hard with the fasting, but we managed. I went into the hospital, I held him in my arms, they put something with an IV, I was holding him 1 minute, and next minute he went limp, which was also a little scary, and that was it. I went out to wait the hour. There was a couple there who were very, their son was also doing it. They were very worried that their son was deaf. So I overheard them talking, they were talking about cochlear implants, and they were talking about hearing aids. I wasn't even listening, I wasn't worried. An hour later, the doctor comes out and says to them, your child's fine, and they're like hugging each other and everything, and then says to me, your child's deaf in one ear. I just spoiled that already 5 minutes ago by telling you that, but I can't even begin to tell you how shocked I was. I had no idea. And I took that kid who, it didn't matter in the end, he's deaf in one ear, he has a perfect pitch, he sings beautifully, and it really doesn't matter if you're deaf in one ear. In fact, the doctor who takes care of him for his deafness is deaf in one ear, because he held a firecracker too close to his ear one time. They had a contest who can keep the firecracker lit the longest, and he won. So, the sound travels like this, and then it splits, so he hears perfectly fine, but I didn't know that. And for me, like, the kid's deaf. I didn't even know he was autistic yet. He was only two. I just knew there was something. By the way, I didn't even know there was something really wrong with him, because what they called it was developmentally delayed. And to me, delayed was like the bus is delayed means the bus will be here. It will just come a little bit later. So when they told me my kid was delayed, I just thought he'd develop later. I wasn't worried at all. And in fact, I wasn't one of those parents who worried if the kid did something a little late. And then when he was in school, they called me from the Board of Ed, and they said when he was about 3.5 years old, and I got this letter in the mail, and it said, your son took an IQ test. His IQ is below 40. And he's mentally retarded. I was like, what? My kid's delayed. He's going to catch up. I called up the Board of Ed. The lady answered the phone. And I said, I'm just curious about something. It says that my son's like retarded. Like, is this a mistake? So she goes, no, it's not a mistake. I said, but I don't get it. All the therapists, all the doctors, everyone's telling me he's developmentally delayed. And she said, and I will never forget her voice or her words, delayed, retarded, the same thing. And she hung up the phone. Girls, if you ever work in the Board of Ed, don't do that. That's really insensitive. That's how I found out there was a serious problem with my son. Okay, and then I called up my friend. She's like, yeah, it's true. They just, delayed sounds better than retarded, so that's what they say. But if you think about it, it's the same word. I'm like, yeah, I just never really thought about it. You know, it's true. Anyway, so when I found that, I didn't know yet he was retarded, which he's not, by the way, but she was wrong. He's really not. I'm not in denial, okay? Autistic kids are not necessarily retarded. You know, other kinds of kids are, but some are and some aren't. It happens that he's not, but she didn't know that. Okay, anyway, so this song was very meaningful to me. And then also when he came out of the anesthesia, when he had that special test, they told me he's gonna be a little bit edgy, you need to hold him and calm him down. So I was holding him and calming him down, and I was singing to him, B'Shem Hashem. And then my students made a CD when they graduated, and they dedicated that song to Shmuel, which was really sweet. Anyway, the point of this is that after we made Aliyah, one night he was lying in bed, and I said to him, do you want Ima to sing you a song? Now, I don't know what it is. I don't think I have a bad voice, but he can't stand when I sing. Nah, I want you to sing a song! Come on, I'm gonna sing a song, okay? He doesn't mind if anyone else. So somebody explained to me, one of his therapists, that because I'm a female, the pitch of my voice may bother him, and it has nothing to do necessarily with the way I sing. Anyway, that night, for some reason, he let me sing to him. And I was singing B'Shem Hashem, and all of a sudden, he joined in. I just started crying hysterically because that song was so meaningful to me because of everything I've been through and everything I've been through with him. And he's singing along with me that song. It was the most beautiful thing. And again, do I appreciate when my other kids sing with me? I never thought, I didn't care. And it was just, it made me appreciate everything so much. And then of course, when Shmuel finally last year went to the bathroom in the toilet, number two, I can't begin to tell you, like my mother's like, let's make a kiddush. I'm like, no. My 10-year-old went to the bathroom. You don't make a kiddush for that. But you don't understand. I tried, I could write a book on this. I tried every single method that existed and every single method that did not exist. I made things up, and when he finally did so again, of course I was excited with my other kids. It made me appreciate little things. That's Roman numeral number two. Now comes Roman numeral number four. About Shmuel, his personality is just so cute. This has nothing to do necessarily with him being autistic, but he's just so cute. He is absolutely obsessed with the Chafetz Chaim, obsessed with it, okay? And when he was 7 years old, my mother bought him a stuffed dog for his birthday, and he looked at it and he threw it on the couch. And I bought him a picture of the Chafetz Chaim. And he took that, it's huge, it's like bigger than him. Because I went to the store and I saw that they take the pictures and they photocopy them onto canvas and it looks like a painting. I'm sure you've seen those. And it was huge, and I bought it for him for his birthday, and he's like, oh, it's the Chafetz Chaim. And anyone who came in, the plumber, the handyman, oh, I see Shmuel's birthday present, it's the Chafetz Chaim. And he's obsessed with him. And when my husband takes him for a walk on Shabbos and they stop in the shul, he walks over to the bookshelf. You probably have it also. There's a whole set of books that all have a picture of the Chafetz Chaim on them. I don't know if you have them here. He takes them all out and looks at them. Oh, the Chafetz Chaim. Every page, you know, in Living Each Day, Growing Each Day. No, that's Rabbi Twersky. There's a Chafetz Chaim book that has a picture of the Chafetz Chaim on every single page. Oh my God. Every page. Chafetz Chaim. Okay. So that's just like adorable. That's just his personality. And it's like, it's the cutest thing to be obsessed with. And by the way, he has never, ever spoken one word of Lashon Hara. Okay? He talks. But if I say to him, like, why are you upset? Did Shlomo hit you? He won't tell me. I think it's just because he doesn't know how, but it sounds nice to say he's obsessed with the Chafetz Chaim and he never spoke that. Okay, here's another thing. He's obsessed with the Jewish holidays, especially Sukkot and Hanukkah. He makes his blocks into a menorah and he lights them. He pretends to light them and he sings. He needs to light 8 candles every night of Hanukkah. This is a big problem we have every single night of Hanukkah. He makes all the brachos, even Shachayanu, every single night. But he's obsessed with Tekiya Shevarim Teruah. And this is a little bit of a problem, because this is what happened. One time, I had a really, really bad cold, and my throat was killing me, and I coughed. And then when I finished coughing, he goes, Shvarim. And you don't understand how every cough hurt me, but I was sick. It was so much easier than dealing with his tantrum. And then he's like, Teruah. And now he has this new thing. Ima, Tekiya Shvarim Teruah, forwards and backwards. So we have to do a hug and kiss, Tekiya Shvarim Teruah, forwards and backwards, which is cute. You know, we go, And then he caught me yawning. And girls, it's not pretty. It's really annoying. Okay? So it's adorable. It could be a little bit annoying, but he's just really cute. That was my shortest Roman numeral, and that was number four. Now comes number five. Number five is that because of Shmuel, my whole family is, thank God, much more sensitive. And I've seen studies that show that children, siblings of children with special needs, are more sensitive. They grow up to be more sensitive. So my daughter was 2 years old, and she had some hair on her head. I'm saying some hair, because it took her 1 year to grow anything. So by the time she was born bald, and she was 1 year old, she had a little film there. And then she had some curls. Anyway, he was pulling her hair she must have been 2.5, 3 years old. He was pulling her hair. By that time, she had curls. Now let me tell you, I don't know if anyone's ever pulled your hair. It hurts. I love Shmuel, but when he pulls my hair, I want to punch him in the nose. I really do. It hurts so badly. And there was this little 3-year-old, as he was pulling her hair, Shmuel, I love you so much. Why are you hurting me? Now, I never, ever told her to say that. I would never tell her, well, he's pulling your hair. Tell him you love him. And why is he doing that? No. I would, whatever. But, I mean, she's just, there's no question, she's 8 years old, she's going on 300, and she's like a little grandma, and she takes such good, when you see them together, he's big bone and she's more petite, they look like the cutest couple, okay? But she really mommies him, she really takes care of him. In general, my family is more sensitive, even though he sometimes drives them crazy. And I want to give an example of how he drives my family crazy. When we lived in Queens, we had this apartment. There was this big room that was the living room and the dining room, and there was a kitchen, but the door of the kitchen was open. And then there was the fridge. So let's pretend that whole area was from that wall till here, okay? And then the fridge was there. So autistic kids love to line things up. It makes them feel that there's an order in their disorderly world, and they love to line things up. So Shmuel used to go over to the fridge and take out every single bottle, can, and jar, and line it up all the way from the fridge till the porch, which was about this space. Now, that's okay, except the front door opens sometimes right into his choo-choo train, and then we'd have pickle juice on the floor, or apple juice, or orange juice, or milk, and he wouldn't let us put it. I mean, when I say he wouldn't let us, what does that mean? I mean, we're bigger than him. He would either take it out right away again, or he would have such a tantrum that either the bottles were driving us crazy or his tantrum was driving us crazy. And when he tantrumed, he would bang his head against the wall, he would pull out his hair, he would hit himself. It was very, very difficult to watch. So both of those things were very difficult for us. So it was very hard for the family. There was like a sour milk permanently smelling up the living room, and you know, nobody would ever be able to have juice because it was always spoiled, and it was just annoying, and I would be like all embarrassed. People would walk. We once made a party for my mother-in-law for her birthday, and there was a knock on the door, and everything was set up beautifully, including a choo-choo train on the floor from the fridge to the porch. There was a knock on the door. Somebody came early, and I hadn't had a chance to clean up the choo-choo train. It was my husband's cousin, who's a psychiatrist, thank God. I opened the door, she's like, oh, Shmuel, what a beautiful choo-choo train out of the bottles. And I said, thank God, it's you, you know, open the door. Anyway, so my daughter had this brilliant idea. She took him to the computer and she found a program that's actually used for people who are interior decorators. And basically there's all sorts of objects of furniture on the program, and you know, there's everything. So she taught him how to drag the picture of the pickle jar and how to drag the picture of the milk and the juice, make a choo-choo train on the computer. And it was amazing. And then she taught him how to print it, and that was great. So he made a choo-choo train out of the soccer balls and the pianos and the pickle jars, and he had like 30 pages of choo-choo trains, and it was wonderful. Till he decided to line up the pictures of the choo-choo trains from the fridge to the porch, which was a little more difficult because if somebody walks by, it rustles the paper and it messes up his choo-choo train, and he would go tantruming like crazy. So this is not so simple. So I'm his mother and I'm a little older, but my other son, it's not so easy. I'm not pretending that it's always easy, but thank God because of that, they're more sensitive. You know, there are things that he does that can be a little bit annoying. Okay, and now Roman numeral number 6, and this is my favorite part of having Shmuel. What happened was, well, once I realized he was autistic, I got a flyer in the mail that talked about this program called Sunrise. And they said, come here, a free lecture in this hotel in Manhattan about this program called Sunrise that helps autistic kids, deal with autism. Okay, so I went to the lecture. It was a 3-hour lecture, and it was given by a guy named Ron Kaufman. Ron was about 35 years old, and he used to be autistic, extremely autistic, all the way on that spectrum that I'm telling you about. He was completely in his own world. All he did was spin plates, flap, and rock his hands back and forth. And he was born completely normal. But by the end of his first year in this world, he was extremely autistic. This was in the 70s. And in the 70s, some brilliant man had published a book about the refrigerator moms, which is blaming the moms for autistic kids and saying that it's because they're not warm enough with their babies that their kids completely withdraw into themselves. So there were people walking over to parents in the supermarket who already had a hard enough life because they had an autistic kid and saying, don't you feel guilty? It was horrible because this doctor was very famous. It was later disproved, but it was around this time. And this family, Susie and Bears, the father's name was Bears. His real name was Barry Neal, but he was very hairy, so they called him Bears. Bears and Susie Kaufman went from institution to institution to check out things for their son, and they found horrible things going on. In one place, they were shocking the children every time they flapped their hands or they hummed. They shocked them to stop the children from doing that. In another place, they believe in this kind of therapy there. You bring the child back through all the stages that maybe they missed something. So they would take this 10-year-old girl who was walking perfectly, they would wrap her up in a blanket so she couldn't see, and they drag her along the floor to simulate the womb, and then they would force the kid to crawl, and it was just horrible, and they said, we are not bringing our kid here. And basically, they decided that they were gonna help the kid in their own way, and everybody was against them. All the doctors were saying that they were doing the wrong thing. Even Bear's father was so angry at them that he stopped talking to them. And he said, what do you think you're doing? Anyway, one day Susie was trying so hard to get through to Ron, and all he did was flap his hands, hum, and spin these plates. But he did it amazingly. He knew exactly how to balance them. And she was sort of sitting with him, and as he was rocking, and suddenly she found herself rocking with him. And then Bears came downstairs and saw them. And then later he said, Susie, what were you doing? And she said, I don't really know. I sort of felt like I wanted to show him that it's okay what you're doing. And if you won't come to my world and won't look at me, I'm going to come into your world. I'm going to show you that I love you the way you are. Anyway, she goes, but it's too hard for me, because then the phone rang, and then the doorbell rang, and then the other kids came home. And he keeps getting distracted. And anyway, she said, I want to work with him. What they did, this is unbelievable, for the next 3 years, they cleared out their bathroom of anything distracting. Susie sat with him for 12 hours a day for the next 3 years. And when I say the next 3 years, she started to use other people to help her, like her other children and someone who lived in the house, and the father helped, and I don't mean exactly her. She brought him 100% out of this extreme autism. He was the one who spoke to me. He has a degree in bioethics from Brown University. He has a near genius IQ. And by the way, he had a below 30 IQ when he was first tested. And he is completely functional. And after this, other families started to come to them and ask them to help with their kids. And they started to, and finally they made a center in Massachusetts. And they called it the Sunrise Program, because they helped their son rise out of the autism. It's not S-U-N, it's S-O-N. And one of the two most amazing things about this program is, number one, they don't judge a kid's behaviors. Those people who try to shock the kids because they're flapping their hands or they're rocking back and forth are saying those behaviors are bad. They believe very strongly that if the kid's doing that, they're doing that for some reason to take care of themselves. And they gave this beautiful example. There was a little girl who came to their program. Now, they have a program in Massachusetts, and parents come to it, and I went on that for 2 weeks, and that's how I learned how to work with my son. And I ended up, since I made Aliyah, I was homeschooling him for 3 years. A lot of the parents who do this program homeschool their kids. I was homeschooling him for 3 years. This is the first year that he's in a school, and that's why I said to you before, here was I loved my job, and if you would have told me 5 years ago I'd be homeschooling my kid, I would have said, you're crazy. I need to get out of the house. I need to be with people that I would love it and not feel I'm sacrificing something. It's not possible. But I did it. I loved it. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. If I would have felt like I was a big martyr, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Here's this beautiful story. This little girl came with her parents to this center, and they really help you. And she was always going like this. And her parents and therapists were taught to say, quiet hands, quiet hands. So she would, like, she was a good girl, she'd sit on her hands. And after a few minutes, she couldn't take it anymore. So she'd pick up her, go with that again. She came to Sunrise. They said, take her to an eye doctor. So she went to an eye doctor. And this is what the eye doctor discovered. You know how there's two kinds of cells in your eyes? There's rods and there's cones. One of them, I forgot which, is responsible for depth perception, and hers weren't working. That means that to her, that wall was as close to her as this phone, which means that her whole life, she always felt like the world was falling on her face. The only way that she could activate those cells was by going like this. So here's her therapist and her parents, meaning well, telling her quiet hands. She's sitting in school on her hands. She feels like the whole world's falling on her. You can imagine how she feels. And then they expect her to learn math and spelling. How could she focus? She's going crazy. So once they realized this, they stopped telling her to do that. Eventually, she didn't need to do that anymore. She also came completely out of autism. They actually made a movie in the 70s, which when I give this speech in some other places where they have a night activity afterwards, I bring the movie with me, and it's an optional thing. I show it. I didn't think of doing that, but they have an NBC made a TV like a movie, a two-hour movie out of this story of Ron, who came completely out of autism. So that's the first thing that's amazing about this program. They don't judge it. The second and most amazing thing is also they teach the parents to love the child the way the child is, even though you still want more for him. You see, that sounds like a contradiction. What they teach is a lot of times we use negative feelings to others and to ourselves in order to motivate ourselves to do something. For example, if you don't like the way you look in the mirror and then you go, "Ugh, you're so fat, you're so ugly, you're such a pig, you know, don't eat so much." To motivate yourself, and you feel really bad about yourself, to motivate yourself not to eat so much. Well, what happens usually, you just feel bad about yourself. They say, you can love your kid, yourself, the world, the way it is, even though you still want them to change. And this was a beautiful idea that I use with my other kids too. It's not just, and you could use for yourself. It's an amazing idea. It's an amazing program. It's an amazing idea. And one other thing, when they do this program, they spend half the time teaching the parents to have a positive attitude about their kid. Because if you feel angry at your kid, then you won't be able to help him. And I'll tell you one last story just from this program, which to me was unbelievable. I went on the 5-day program, and personally, I was never really angry that I had an autistic kid. So I thought to myself, you know, this attitude stuff, I probably won't need so much. Well, after the 5 days were over, I was so happy that I had an autistic kid. It sounds crazy. I didn't mind before. I was actually happy that I had this opportunity. And this is what happens. The first day of the program, they randomly call up a row and they say, tell me something nice about your kid. So every parent says something nice. And then the whole program goes, and the last day of the program, they tell you to take out a picture of your kid. Everyone's told to bring a picture. Tape it onto the front of in front of you, into the back of the seat of the person in front of you. And then they turn on soft music and they tell you, for 20 minutes, I want you to write a letter to your kid as if your kid understands everything. And then whoever wants to read it out loud could. And then you can imagine there's a lot of crying. It's very beautiful. And then after that, they have a question and answer session. So this lady raised her hand and said, listen, I've been in this program for 5 days. I feel really good about my kid. I feel very positive. I feel like I can help him. But my husband did not come on the program. What should I do when I get home if my husband doesn't feel this way? They said, good question. We're going to tell you a story. One time, there was a lady who came on this program. She was very moved. She really changed a lot. She went home so positive, and she started to work with her kid. But there's a weird thing about this program that people who don't understand it, and they make fun of it. And people have even said that to me, oh, Sunrise, that's the program where you copy your kid. Remember, I explained to you how the mother sort of went into the world with the kid and brought him out. But people who don't understand it, they, like when the kid's doing that, you do that temporarily just to bond with the kid and then you quickly do something with it. In other words, it's not like you sit there the whole time doing that. Anyway, she came home, she was doing the things with her kid and her husband was yelling at her. You're being irresponsible, you're exacerbating the problem, you're not helping. And he was yelling, she couldn't take it. She called up Sunrise and says, help me. So they said, you know what, try this, nothing was working. They said, let him come on our program. He came on the program and he happened to be in that first row of people called up the first day. And the lady with the microphone, her name's Bryn, she's Ron's sister, and she's also working in the program. She went from person to person, tell me something nice about your kid. Everyone's nice. She gets to him, he's the last one in the row. He was about 6'7", muscles, tattoos, piercings, denim, leather, metal, everything. Tell me about your kid. I'm not telling you about my kid. I want to know what the blank you did to my wife. So I don't know. I wasn't there that day. I don't know. Anyway, he was doing the 5-day program. The last day,
he read his letter out loud and was crying like a baby, which just shows you how you can, a person, if with the right tools, can change his attitude completely. And now, when I went to the first sukkah that I made Aliyah, my Breslover neighbors, you know, the one with the magnet on their door, but they didn't have the magnet on the door then, they invited me over. And I found out something very interesting that Breslover kids are raised on that I never heard of, which is the idea that the children's neshama picks the family. I never heard of that. But this was like ABC to them. Yeah, of course. My neshama picked these parents. And that way the mother says to me, whenever the kids say, like, why are you doing that? The mother will say, I don't know, you picked me, you know? So I'm like, that's so cool. Shmuel picked this family. So after thinking about all these things, as I said, showed me my potential, gave me a greater sense of hashgacha and spirituality, made me appreciate little things. He just has the most adorable personality. My family's more sensitive. And I've learned through the Sunrise program to really accept him and others and love them the way they are, even if I want more. I was honestly able to tell my son Shlomo that I am so happy that Shmuel picked our family. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Haber, for sharing.